You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. It's a warm welcome back to the marvellous John Olson as his latest book in the Stranger Bridgerland series hits the shelves. This time, John takes us on a trip to the gem state, Idaho, with tales of time slips, near-death experiences, strange lights in the sky, haunted battlefields, and creepy encounters in the woods. But before we join John, don't forget you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up at patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. And you can also click the link in the show notes. Thank you to each and every one of you that continue to support the show with your contributions. Greatly appreciate your time and trouble. Mysteries and Monsters is across most social media platforms. Please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. And you can also visit mysteriesandmonsters.com for episodes and news. Our exclusive merchandise site is available via TeePublic, and you'll find the link for that in the show notes as well. Our intro and outro music are performed by the marvellous Weary Pines. Thank you as always to Dean Bestel for his artwork, and the show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys. One last thing, I'd just like to say thank you to everyone who spent some time in my company, who said hello to me at the Strange Days Festival last weekend. What a brilliant festival that was. Matt and his team and the venue were incredible hosts. Nothing was too much trouble. And it was a wonderful collection of us weirdos all hanging out together and having a great time listening to such wonderful speakers. Extra special thanks to the lovely Charlie and Amber and also Jason and Kaylee, who had to put up with me and my mischievousness over the weekend. It was a pleasure to meet you all, and especially to everybody that said they listened to the show and enjoyed my talk. I hope you have a wonderful rest of the year, and hopefully we'll see you there next year. Now then, enough of all that. Let's welcome John Olson back as we head to Idaho to reveal some of the state's creepy stories. It's a very warm welcome back to the one and only John Olson, as his latest collection of creepy stories as part of his wonderful Stranger Bridgerland series is available now. This ninth book sees John head north to the Gem State, as the beautiful scenery of Idaho seems to hold plenty of strange and creepy tales. John, welcome back to Mysteries and Monsters.
Thank you for having me. It is always such a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
I always look forward to speaking with you, John. You're one of the nicest people I've had the opportunity to get to know during this show. And you always surprise me with your books because you're such a lovely chap. And yet You always drop two or three terrifying stories on us. But this one, as I was saying before we started the interview proper, there's a couple in here that gave a chill running up and down my spine, sir.
Yeah. There was some really, really creepy ones in there that, you know, I love to get the creepy ones. I love them all, of course. But yeah, some of those that really make you think or look behind the door before you go to bed at night. I like those stories a lot. So I was lucky to get, you know, some great stories from people for this book. So
yes, it's coming to something, John, where a man in his midlife crisis, as this show seems to be representing for me these days. Even I sometimes have to lift the duvet up and just check under the bed. And I think, what am I reading here, John? What are you trying to do to me?
Well, you know, that's what you're hoping for in a book like this. You know, you're hoping to get a little scare and, you know, get your blood pressure up a little bit, not too much, but a little bit is good. So,
yeah, I think sometimes Idaho seems to be one of those states, John, that really gets overlooked for a lot of reasons. I think it's just because it's a very quiet state in general. You know, it's one of the nicest states in the Americas to live. It's got a wonderful economy. You've got brilliant education, some of the best scenery in the whole of the country, in my opinion, I would suspect. It just seems a strange state to have such a wide collection of weirdness, because the wonderful thing about this is we seem to have all sorts going on. We've got mimics, we've got creepy ghosts, we've got Tlatelolco on her holidays, it would seem. We've got cryptids, yeah. Strange lights in the sky, and things that just make us scratch his head. Were you surprised to receive such a wide variety of weirdness from Idaho?
You know, I really wasn't, just because of how familiar I am with Idaho.
Right.
I look out my window and if I lean far enough forward, I can see Idaho. That's how far north in Utah I am. So, and when I met my wife, she was living in Idaho at the time. So I have a great fondness for Idaho. I still have a lot of friends up there. And so, you know, it's a state that just has, you know, it changes a lot, just like Utah, from southern Utah to the northern, it changes a lot. So there's a lot of change in Idaho as well, and a lot of open country, which I love, you know, personally. And so, yeah, it was great to get the stories that I did and be able to meet some new people from Idaho and get their stories. It was really a lot of fun.
Hmm. Well, I'm not surprised, because obviously you're a very keen outdoorsman, John. You're somebody that enjoys going out there, hiking and fishing and all kinds of weekend pursuits that take you out there. Were you reconsidering some of the locations you'd visited after reading some of these stories you'd been sent?
You know, when I was much younger, I spent a lot of time in the mountains alone, right. Which even now that I'm older, I'm like, I realize I shouldn't have done that. And I'm definitely not going to do that now. I wouldn't go some of the places I went alone as a young man. Now I definitely would prefer having someone with me whenever I go out into the wilderness because of those stories, for sure.
Well, I mean, we're joking and pulling each other's legs about this, but I think one of the things people forget about Idaho is obviously Yellowstone runs down the sort of northeastern corner of the state, mm-hmm. which some people just don't seem to count Idaho as being part of Yellowstone. Whilst it's not obviously the biggest part, it's still there by some considerable margin, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And to the west of Yellowstone in Idaho, there's a big park it's called Island Park, and it butts up right against Yellowstone. And so, you know, it on of itself is an amazing place as well. So yeah, it's, you know, they forget a little bit about that. But yeah, Idaho is right in there with the big ones like Wyoming and Montana and, you know, for wilderness areas.
Well, I think one of the stories I'd like to start with first, as we're talking about the wilderness, is one of those that, as I said, gave me the chills, which is Something in the Woods, which is this story from Amanda and Alec.
Yes.
Now, this is one of those where you say, I mean, when you start reading some of these stories, I think your brain automatically thinks, I think I know what this could be. And then it turns up, John, and you're like, oh, I've no idea what's going on here, and I'm glad I don't.
Right. It's really strange. That one was very strange. And again, it's amazing how many of the stories I get are from the wilderness. And this is one of those where Amanda and her husband, you know, are out into the wilderness. They're out, you know, traveling and camping. And, you know, they come across just this creature that ends up just really being frightening. This large, I would almost call it muscular, even though it was, you know, black and just kind of, it's so strange. It's hard to explain. It yes. really is. It's kind of hard to explain. But they, you know, as they were up there camping, they see this creature coming around them. It was jet black, almost ink black, which is interesting to me because of the, you know, how many people who have mentioned that when they see it's almost not like a shadow creature, which usually appears at night. This is something that seemed to appear during the day, but being inky black. And it approached them while they were out on the little hike after camping, and then started following them back as they left. And along with some of the other, you know, creatures that I've interviewed people about, like the watchers or shadow creatures, this one seemed very menacing. Like it the way it followed them, the way they had to run all the way down and back. And it's just one of those things that you don't expect to see in the wilderness when you're out there enjoying the wilderness. This giant inky black muscular looking creature that basically scared them out of the wilderness. And it took them a very long time to get back into going camping in, which I completely understand. But yeah, this one was strange. I've interviewed a few other people who've had experiences with similar creatures. But this one seemed just, you know, very malevolent, really angry. But yeah.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that, because obviously in that particular section, you mentioned that you've had other stories of people encountering these inky black. And I think Amanda gives us a brilliant visualization of it. She said it was like printer ink on brand new paper, which I think anybody of our vintage, John, knows exactly what it's like, because we've probably spelt ink on beautiful, a lovely brand new pack of white paper when we were fighting with our Epsons in the early noughties, probably.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, she does a good job of explaining it. And to me, that, you know, the way she explained it when I was interviewing her and how she got such a good look at it was, to me, you know, and it was still, even, you know, all these years later, it still scared her quite a bit to talk about it, which you would imagine, you know, would happen. But yeah, it makes you wonder what it was or what's it associated with, and you know, why was it there, and why did it run them off from their little excursion? And so yeah, for sure, very, very creepy one.
Is it the most malicious ones of this type of creature that you've come across, John? Because this seems to be quite bullying, because obviously Amanda gets pushed to the ground and it seems to be giving off a real, as you say, malevolence to itself. But once again, it doesn't make a sound. It's just big, black, hulking, menacing thing that's just this weird shape chasing them down out of its area, it would seem.
Yeah, it is. It seems, you know, of all of the stories of whatever these kind of creatures are, this one's definitely the most, you know, I guess you'd say physical with them, where, you know, she gets pushed down and it's, you know, physically chasing them. There was another story that I collected from a gentleman. It's in one of my other books, from Montana, and he came across a very similar creature when he was hunting. But when he came across this creature, there was a strange, almost like a static hum that came with it. And it was so intense, he actually passed out, and his friend found him after. And so these creatures, whatever they are, seem to be, you know, very angry, I guess is the way that you could put it. They're really not happy when they meet people in the wilderness. They, for some reason, want them out of there as quick as possible. So I'm hoping to get more stories like this so that I can kind of build a little bit more of a profile of these creatures too.
Absolutely. The last thing I think any of us need is a new malevolent entity running around the woods. John, you would suggest that the woods of North America are already jam-packed with strange and frightening creatures.
Yeah, there's plenty of, like, well-known scary creatures like bears and mountain lions, let alone, you know, you're adding these malevolent inky black creatures that are also angry, and yeah, for sure.
I had to chuckle at the end where, obviously, I hope Amanda shared it with you. You've not included it in the book, but the location, John, because, you know, I wouldn't, you know, with the greatest respect, yeah, it's lovely to share your story, but I'd really like to know where not to go in Idaho, please, Amanda.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. She gave me kind of a good idea of where it is roughly, so I won't be going there for in any, you know, early times by now, but yeah, for sure, so. Be interesting to know if anybody else has had experiences in that area, though.
Well, I would imagine as well, one of the joys of when you release a book, John, about particular areas in certain states is that some people may think, oh my goodness, I'm not the only person that seems to have encountered something as weird as this. And it would probably open the door to get more stories of a similar nature then, no doubt.
Yeah, it really does. And I've had very, different instances where, you know, I've interviewed somebody about something extremely strange like this. And then once the book comes out, I have a great number of people who contact me to say they thought they were the only one that had that experience. And I end up getting more stories like that. So hopefully, you know, I get more stories like this, because like I said, I would love to have to be able to build a little bit more of a profile on whatever these creatures are. So. Mm.
Sounds like good advice for us all there, John.
Yeah.
I love a strange story that seems to be a time slip, John. And you've got a brilliant one in here about a store, which is one of those great stories where everything seems pretty mundane. The author of this story seems to have had the interview from hell. He's bored, he's tired, he's hungry, and he just wants to get home. I think all of us have been in situations like this at some point in our lives, having to go through this rigmarole of performing to try and get a new position at some company or other. But this takes a very strange turn, because as with anything, he's quite sensible. He thinks he needs a drink, freshens up, keep his eyes on the road and make sure he gets home in one piece. But unfortunately for Adam, I think it is, he seems to pick the worst story he could possibly choose, and it all goes sideways from there.
Yeah, so this one was really interesting, and like you say, it's so strange. He traveled all the way across Idaho for a job interview, like you said, and it went late, and he had no plans to stay anywhere, so he headed home. And he started getting tired, and there's several places there where, you know, different places where you could pull off, but he picked this spot to pull off and maybe just, you know, close his eyes for a little bit and get a little rest so that he could just, you know, maybe an hour's worth of sleep or something. So he pulls off, and oddly enough, I know exactly where this is that he's talked about. I've driven that highway or that freeway often enough that I know where he's talking about. And he pulls over and he does close his eyes for a little bit. And when he wakes up to a bright light, and there's this store that wasn't there when he pulled over, which was strange. And he's a little confused about that. But he's like you say, he's like, I'm gonna get a drink. I'm gonna, you know, try and wake up a little bit and then get going. And so he walks over to the store, doesn't recognize the name at all. It's kind of a weird name on the store, and it's really bright, like overly bright with fluorescent lighting. And when he walks in, the lady behind the counter just stares at him. She doesn't really interact with him. He goes to the back of the store, and there's not really any drinks or anything that make any sense to him. There's nothing that he really wants to get when he's in there. Nothing that on the shelves or nothing in the coolers or anything are anything that he recognizes. And, you know, he finally leaves and again tries to talk to the lady, and she just stares at him. And, you know, so he gets out and leaves and gets in his car and goes, and he's had a little bit of a, you know, a time slip where he's lost more time than he realized through all of this, only, you know, again, to find out later that there is no store there. There's never been a store right there. And so on top of being, you know, losing time and having a weird interaction with this lady, and then there's never been a store there. I mean, it's one of those that, like you say, it's a real head scratcher. And, you know, I can't remember if I gave some, you know, when I talked to him, I gave him a few ideas of what it might have been. None of which he liked, the idea of, but, you know, he somehow slipped into a different dimension where there is a store there, and it's super weird. that it was actually a UFO that had landed and he walked in not knowing everything what was going on. And, you know, I just giving him some suggestions of what it could possibly be. And I even suggested that he get hypnosis, which he would rather go on living life ignorant of whatever it was than actually find out, which, you know, because he was afraid of what he might find out. But yeah, that one was, I really love that story because it's creepy and strange and makes no sense. It's like right out of the Twilight Zone, that story.
Do you get many stories of this nature, Joel? I think because when you look at them, they do seem peculiar because everything seems normal, like you say, until, as Adam refers to when he's telling you, there's nothing really in the, you know, it's almost as if none of the brands are recognizable. And
right.
I think when you go in a shop, there are certain products wherever you are in the Western world, you will see them wherever you are, be it a certain type of chocolate or Coca-Cola or Pepsi for goodness sakes, that, you know, that they seem to be omnipresent in any sort of retail environment in our lives, John. I would imagine there's only certain specific names for certain products that might be different between the States and the UK, but we've both got Coca-Cola, we've both got Pepsi, we've got numerous other products that are available. So if you walk in into a shop in the middle of Idaho and you can't even see Coca-Cola, that would set my alarm bells ringing straight away. I'd be like, what's going on here? This doesn't make any sense, even on that basic shopping level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the entire thing was just so strange. Like you say, from the fact that he didn't recognize any of the brands or anything, and the way that when he communicated with the lady or tried to, she just kind of looked at him like he was even speaking a different language or something. And, you know, yeah, the whole thing is just really strange. They're rare, but I do have a few stories similar to that. But a lot of those, I believe that the person that I talked to actually did slip into another dimension, because I interviewed a gentleman who was at work. He lived in Arizona. He was at work and went down to the local store not too far away. And when he walked in, he got really dizzy and then he kind of came to, and then the entire store was flipped from the last time he was in there. So, and like all the aisles were opposite. He ran into what looked like his brother and tried to have a conversation with him. The guy was angry and said he didn't know who he was, only to find out later that his brother was on vacation and not even in the city at the time. and then he also ended up losing, like, in his, according to him, he'd been there maybe a half an hour through everything. And when he got back to work, his boss was angry because half of the day was gone and he had no idea where the day had gone. And he called his brother to find out why he was mean to him at the store. And his brother's like, I'm still on vacation. I told you, you know, me and my family are on vacation. So, you know, there is a few stories like that, but this one's even strange in the fact that, like I said, he didn't recognize anything in the store, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't exist. That store doesn't even exist. So it's pretty weird. And I can't remember off the top of my head what the name of the store that was on the top, but it was something that he did not recognize and has never been a store, gas station or anything. So very strange.
Yeah. I mean, like you say, when you're talking about it, and obviously you give him these potential solutions that he clearly I'm not really sure what he wanted you to tell him, John, because what do you say to somebody like that? Because it looks like a store, it should be a store, but when you go in, it clearly isn't a store. And like it's almost like it's a facsimile of what is it. It's almost as if someone doesn't actually know what stores are for. They've just created the illusion of a store to trick people for whatever reason, because it doesn't serve its purpose. Because as soon as you go in there, you start thinking, this just doesn't look right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so it's one of those things, like I said, I tried to give him some possible explanations for it, but even now I've got no idea. I've got no idea what it was. Who knows? I have no idea. Like you say, it was almost set up like somebody who had been explained to verbally what a store was, but you know, didn't get the picture of exactly what it's for. So
but I mean, when you've had time slip stories before, John, given to you, the one thing that strikes me, whilst I've read a few, and there's a couple of notable ones from the UK here, one of my particular favorites, which was poo-pooed by certain people, was a family who drove to France and stopped at this quaint little B&B they discovered, and they went in and they just thought it was really old-fashioned. And they seem to speak a very certain dialect of French. Because once again, one of the things people seem to forget about the French is you've got accents all over the place. I've got a friend who's from the north of France, and he tells me an amusing story about him once being asked to sort of chaperone another French speaker at a party. And she laughed at him because his accent was so common, because she was from the south of France and he sounded allegedly like a peasant to her, and he just thought, well, I'm not going to help you at all, you're very rude. So even the right. French person fell out with each other. So and I suppose when you get these kind of stories, they were saying it just felt a bit strange. Everything was really cheap. It seemed really, really old-fashioned, like it was all gas lanterns and candles for lighting. Mm-hmm. And they stayed there the night, they paid, though they seemed to give them far more money than they expected to get back, and none of it made sense. They went, did their 2 weeks traveling around France, came back and thought, well, we'll have to stop there again. It was ridiculously cheap. Not there, nothing like it there. Stopped and asked a few locals. Nobody had any idea what they were talking about. And so when this story hit the papers and the paranormal publications here, this is from sort of, I don't know, 30 odd years ago, John. I remember hearing about it in the 1990s. They were dismissed as either being idiots who didn't understand that not everybody in France is the same, and you will still stumble across these sort of little villages and places that seem quite detached from people who might be only used to going to Paris or Lyon or Marseille or something. But also the fact that, obviously, being English, they're idiots and they don't understand how money works and things. And it was a very strange kind of... The dismissal of their experience was, well, they're clearly stupid. But it was four people and they all backed each other up on what happened. It was two couples who'd known each other a very long time, two husbands and wives, John. And I think sometimes you can dismiss these kind of stories, but it wasn't this kind of losing time. They knew how long they'd been there. It was just the whole experience was very odd. But
yeah,
I've not come across many here where you've got missing time as part of it. People just feel a bit out of the loop, and it's almost like you click your fingers, John, and you're back in the real world within 10, 15 minutes. But this story, and I know some you've mentioned before, there's missing time included in that, which for most people you only associate with one particular Fortean phenomena, which is obviously not what Adam wanted to hear.
Right, exactly. Yeah. When it comes to, it's interesting because people who have close interactions with UFOs, whether they're close enough to see the occupants or something, they all seem to have a time dilation that's really strange like that. And, you know, I've interviewed people who, there was another story in this book. I interviewed a woman who's had two or three different time slips in her lifetime, where she went back and was in an older time and then came right back, and she didn't have any time dilations or anything. But it's interesting on some of these where they just seem to have this added element to it, and you just wonder what the difference is or what's going on. And I read that story as well several times, the one that you were talking about, and I know that in Liverpool there's a road in Liverpool where it happens quite often to people. It's happened to multiple people on that street in Liverpool, and I love time slips. They're really fascinating to me.
Yes, I was actually there a couple of months ago. It's Bold Street, it's called, John.
Yes, that's right, Bold Street.
And we had a bit of a breakthrough in that particular case, because the original account was about an off-duty policeman who walked in, and it turned into a shop from the 1950s, because this happened once again in the 19... There was a lot of strange time slips happening in Britain in the 1990s, it would seem, John. And he turned round and saw a girl who walked in behind him, and they both looked as shocked as each other to be there. So they both were experiencing the time slip together. And so because of the person that shared the original story, they have a bit of a reputation for being economical with facts, shall we say. And so some people didn't take it particularly seriously. However, gotcha. We have a massively successful show here now called Uncanny, which is presented by a chap called Danny Robbins, which I think you can view on BBC America over there. And they did a little bit where they went to Bold Street, but this time they got the girl, which completely validated the story, because the story that had always gone forward wasn't her story. It was the policeman's. But now we've got her. And she told basically the same story, but from the opposite side, that she'd walked in and the only thing that looked normal to her was this other chap in the store. Everything else looked like she'd walked into 1954 for some reason. And I'm disappointed to say when I went, nothing happened at all, John. But I did discover a lovely bombed out church at the top of the street, which was having a craft market, which was marvellous.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you go looking for one thing and you find something completely different and have a great time regardless. But it's a very famous story. I mean, do you have in your experience, John, have you found a location that seems to have a history of this weirdness attached to it, or is it quite sporadic?
Generally it's sporadic, but oddly enough, so I don't have any personal stories that I've collected, but I've read a lot of stories. If you hear about the Gettysburg battlefield during the Civil War. Now, they have a lot of ghosts there, but they also have what seems to be time slips that happen there quite a bit as well. At one point, they had a dignitary from another country that was touring. And so the people in charge were waiting for him to come. And he came in his car. And he was just so amazed because when they were coming in, they had got an entire regiment of soldiers with guns and cannons to do a mock battle for him as he was coming in. And they looked at each other and they're like, yeah, we don't have anybody out there doing anything today. But he had stopped with his car and his driver and had seen this entire battlefield simulation he thought was a simulation with the north and the south and the cannons, and he'd watched the whole thing. And when he got to the main place to tell them how fabulous it was, they kind of looked at each other and they're like, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. We don't have they at times do have things like that that go on, but not that day they didn't. So, you know, that one seems to be, and it could be just the fact that it's got so much emotion tied up to it that people are either time slipping or they're seeing through, yeah, like a window into time. There's a little bit of a difference there between people who seem to go back in time on accident and those who get to see through a window of time, because I've collected both kind of stories, so...
Do you have any other sort of locations attached to the American Civil War that have that kind of reputation? Because the thing about England here, there's not much of it that hasn't had some skirmish or battle on it over the centuries. And so you've got certain battlefields from the tip of Scotland all the way down to Cornwall and everywhere in between, it would seem, where on occasion people seem to, as you've just referred to there about Gettysburg, sometimes they think they're in a reenactment. And then they suddenly realise that there's dead people laying around. Scotland, there's a few of those where you've got a few battles between the Scots and the English where there seems to be people just find themselves in a blood-strewn battlefield. So is Gettysburg unique in that, or are there other stories of that nature attached to other notorious locations in that particular conflict, John?
So not far from here, again, just over the Idaho border, there's an area that It's called the Bear River Massacre Site, and it's one of the biggest massacres of Native Americans in U.S. history. Mm-hmm. They often and incorrectly tie that to the pioneers in Utah, but it was actually a brigade that came out of California that was sent from the United States, and they came across a village where it was basically just women and children, and they just slaughtered everybody, which was horrific. Mm-hmm. And I have gathered a lot of stories from people, and I want to write about this, but I want to do it in a very respectful way. So I'm still trying to come up with a way that I can do this, but that area is very paranormally active with people seeing, several people that I have talked to who have been driving there at night have had to hit their brakes as women and children in Native American dress seem to run across the road like they're fleeing from that area.
Yeah.
And so I think it's tied a lot to places that have that emotional just strength to it, I guess you could say. And I think somehow that has ties with being able to see into the past or things of that nature. That's why I think battlefields are big with that kind of thing, just because of the emotion and the fear and the death that is all tied up in it. So,
well, yes, absolutely. I mean, it is one of those things. I think if you're going to think there's going to be anywhere that's haunted, it's usually where you've had, regardless, a large loss of life in any particular conflict, whether it's done in such heinous ways as what happened with the massacre, or even in just a conflict between two opposing sides. John, like you say, it's almost like the emotion has soaked into the very ground the events have occurred upon. And then whenever the atmospheric conditions are correct, it's almost like you've got a cinema view of what happened that awful day, wherever you are in the world, it would seem, at certain locations.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the ones, and again, I didn't collect this. It was one that I read. It's actually from England. And this gentleman who's, I think it was either his house or a pub and he was in the basement doing some work, and he watched an entire column of Roman soldiers with the horses and everything walk through his basement, but they were all cut off at the knee. And he later found out it was because there's that much dirt on top of the road, the Roman road that was originally there that runs under his house. And so there's incidents like that that are just kind of fascinating. I love the paranormal and I love history. So the combination of all of that it's amazing for me. So,
well, now we've terrified people even more, John. We're not even scaring them out of the woods. We're scaring them out of battlefields as well now.
Yes.
Summer jobs and staying over in Idaho when you are a young student, you have to be careful on the kind of digs you choose. And this particular story, which is called Weekend from Hell, is a prime example of perhaps always vetting a perspective homestead for yourself, because obviously this is all set up with a young chap who'd been at Boise University and he was going to stay over for the summer. So I would imagine, as often happens here in the UK, John, people will often have digs on university campuses or things, but would they close down over the summer and people who are staying over have to find alternative accommodation for that kind of period? And is that what happened and led to this rather terrifying encounter that happened to this young chap in this particular tale?
Yeah. So it was going to be his first year. He just graduated from high school. And so this was going to be his first year at university, and he got accepted into Boise. And when you go to university here in the United States, and it really depends on the campus and what university, because some universities actually require their freshmen to stay on campus for the first year, mm-hmm. and then they let them move wherever they want to. But he was just going to stay off campus, and he found this apartment very cheap, which probably should be the first red flag when it's that cheap. Yeah. And he hadn't seen it or anything because he's from the other side of Idaho. So his dad helps him, you know, move there. for the weekend. He gets there, I believe it was on a Thursday. And the lady, it's a little apartment behind this woman's home. And she just basically takes his money and says good luck. And says, when you decide to leave, you got to pay me the next month's rent, which was also weird. But he's like, okay. And so he moves in, and right away things start going very strange in the apartment. He hears things, weird things going on. He has a dream about a young man in very 70s style clothes standing in his doorway trying to talk to him, but he can't for some reason. He wakes up just scared to death. All of these things are just going wrong. In fact, one of the first days, he walks down to the grocery store and meets a young gal that he strikes a conversation up with. And when she finds out where he's living, she basically, you know, gives him the, well, good luck with that kind of speech. Like, and he's like, well, what does that mean? And she doesn't elaborate.
Thanks.
But by, I believe it's Sunday. So he got there Thursday, Friday. By Sunday, just all kinds of weird things are going on in the house. It's obvious there's in the apartment, it's obvious there's something going wrong. He goes to take a shower in the morning, and through the curtain, somebody walks in to the bathroom. Ooh. And when he pulls the curtain away, here is this young man again that he had seen before. And basically his eyes are wide. He's pale. He's trying to talk. It's very obvious that his throat has been slit, and he has to basically run out of the house as quick as he could and call his dad to come back all the way across the state of Idaho to get him again. I mean, actually he had his car, so he drove home without just throwing on what clothes he had, and then had to have his dad go back and get his stuff and give the lady his next month's rent, which she never did answer the door again when his dad had to slide it underneath there. But it was just a terrifying experience with a ghost that, I mean, to me, it seems like a murder victim or somebody who was killed there. And, that was his first and only experience with the paranormal. And so, of course, you know, it scared him to death. But even today, he still has nightmares every once in a while of this young man. I tried to do some research to see if there were any missing teenagers in the 70s. I just really couldn't find any information about it or that area. Just nothing about it, but it was very terrifying. Because, and if you think about it too, it's his first time away from home, first time living on his own, and to have this kind of experience, that would be horrible on every level.
Yes, so. Well, we can laugh because it didn't happen to us, John.
Right.
But I mean, it's one of those things, like you say, the tendency here for students in the UK is they tend to spend their first year, like you just mentioned about in the States, they tend to send them in sort of the university campus or the halls of residence as they are here. Mm-hmm. And then after a year, they kind of get fed up being told off for being noisy at midnight and end up house sharing for however long they remain in university with people they've made friends with that first year often, John.
Yeah.
And so, more often than not, that's probably when the strange stories begin, because I'm not sure what it's like in certain university towns in the States, but obviously in Sheffield, a lot of the university accommodation is very old, sort of Victorian terrace or Victorian detached housing. That has so many, I mean, this is the other thing about university accommodation as well. You get so many people going through it. And I would imagine, you know, unfortunately, bad things and accidents do happen to some students during that period.
Right.
Do you get a lot of haunted student accommodation stories? I mean, not many would match this one, to say the very least, because to be yeah. that frightened, you drive home in just what you're wearing and think, bugger my belongings, my dad can get them. It's certainly taking it up to 10, I would suggest.
Yeah, it does. So here in the valley where I live in Cache Valley, we have Utah State University, which is a rather large campus. And I've done extensive research on the ghosts and the things that happen on campus up there. And in fact, one of my favorites is the oldest building on campus is called Old Main. And it was one of the original buildings. And I interviewed a woman who had gotten a job as a cleaner in the morning there, where she would clean from like 3 a.m. till about 8 when the students started coming with a group of a different group. And the very first day she was there, she went down to the basement, which is where the vending machines are when she was on her break. And as she was going down the hall, this woman was coming towards her, and she was in an old style black dress with the pendant at the top, and her hair was all messed up, and she had an armful of books, and she nods at her as she runs by and then disappears, which was really strange. So, you know, she immediately went to one of the other workers and said, this just happened. And they're like, oh, you just met the librarian. That's, we call her the librarian. She's always in a hurry wherever she's going, but we see her all the time. Mm-hmm. And then they said, and then on the third floor, there's a gentleman that stands at the end of the hallway, and he's in an old suit, and he's always facing away from you at the end of the hallway. And if you walk towards him, just before you get to him, he'll turn around the corner and then be gone. And there was another one that stayed in a certain room that would always throw the books around. And there was about, she said, 5 or 6 ghosts in this one building. And she said, everybody knew about them and everybody had experiences. And she said there was oftentimes, there was not a week that she did not have an interaction with a ghost in that building. So it's fascinating that way.
Yeah. Well, at least they all seem to be running away from people there, John.
Right, right.
Rather than coming towards you.
Yeah, they're in a hurry for sure. Yes.
Or telling the cleaners off like that ghost in Brazil.
Yeah, exactly, that they're not doing a good job. That's true, too. So that's funny. I like that story as well.
Yeah. I mean, it is a strange thing. I mean, this is quite a creepy one, like you say, because this is not your standard student ghost story, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good luck to him, because he came back but mm-hmm. lived somewhere else.
And with people, too. He said he made sure he had
a human shield.
People that he lived with. Yeah, I had some tenants with him. So
I'd go round first with a pendulum and see which room gave off the biggest vibe, John, and then say, right, that's your room, Steve. Get in there.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Oh, that's for sure. You show up early, so you get to pick which room feels the best to you. So
but even the landlady seems a bit creepy and a bit strange. The whole thing seems a bit odd. And when I reread it, the fact that she said, oh, well, if you go, make sure you leave me an extra month's rent. This sounds to me like it's a bit of a money spinner for Dolores, I think she's called. Because I think Dolores is quite aware that this house is haunted.
Yeah, I think so. I think she knew very well that he was going to want to leave and she was going to get an extra month from him. So... For sure.
Hey, doing that, you'd be laughing after about 3 months, John. You've made your income for the year, I would imagine.
Yeah, you would. You'd be in good shape.
And like yourself, one of the other stories you mentioned is a story in regards to a nurse. And the story is called Nursing the Dead with Erin.
Yes.
Now, this is quite strange because I was speaking to somebody over the weekend who works in end-of-life care, John, and we were talking about the behavior of patients at that particular point. Mm-hmm. And they told me a particularly strange story about someone who had Alzheimer's and so was quite incoherent and confused at most of times. But she said 6 hours before this person passed away, it was almost like a switch had gone off in their head and they were back to normal.
Yeah.
And they were talking about all the people they were looking forward to see later. And so she thought, whilst they're being very coherent and the conversation is sensible, they thought that perhaps they'd got confused, but in such a way as to think that they were somewhere else and they were going to a party or something. Mm. And then 6 hours later, this particular person passed away. She'd finished her shift. And then when she came in the following day, she was told about it. And that's when she started thinking, were they talking about who was coming to see them later, as in when they passed? And so when you look at this one is quite different. I mean, you don't get many of these. There aren't, it's rare, but I have heard a couple of stories, one firsthand, which is virtually the same, where they thought somebody had come to pay their respects until they realised that the person paying the respects bore a remarkable resemblance to the person who was in the bed that was there.
Yeah, exactly. And this one was right along those lines. She was a nurse in the ER, and she worked the midnight, you know, the graveyard shift. And at the time in Idaho, it was a very quiet shift for the most part. They didn't have much that went on. Mm. But this night in particular, a young man came in who had been in an accident and was in really bad shape. Came in, and her and the doctors and everybody worked on him for quite a while, and he didn't make it. And they called down to the morgue, and it being, you know, not busy time or anything, they didn't have anybody to come up and take care of his body or do anything. And so she volunteered to do that, to prep him for mortician to come in the next day and pick him up. And when she walked into the room, there was a gentleman standing at his bedside looking down at him. And she's like, oh, well, you know, I think a family member must have come in. And, you know, maybe it's, you know, and then when she got close, she realized that they looked very similar to the gentleman in the bed. And he kind of turned to her and mouthed the words, thank you. And then disappeared right in front of her, kind of to say, thank you for trying. Thank you for taking care of me. And of course, she ran out of the room very upset. But what was interesting is this was at the very beginning of her her nurse career. And one of the older nurses, when she told her about it, what I thought was awesome was that the older nurse had said to her, yeah, you're going to see a lot of stuff like that in your career. And so, yeah, it's really kind of, it's fascinating that way for sure.
Mm-hmm. Is it a sort of regular sort of experience you get shared with you, John, when you get these stories like this? Because I think as you say in this particular account, there is something about the people who work in the healthcare profession, in whatever capacity, that their experiences seem to be a bit more switched on, a bit more focused, because they deal with these kind of scenarios on a day-to-day basis. Sadly, it's not something they're not used to. And right. So the thing about it is that if they were making it up or exaggerating, it would be happening all the time. But it's what always strikes me is you will get very experienced medical staff who might have had 1, 2, 3 even perhaps experiences of a variety of levels. Because this is the other thing about this. They're not always the same either. This one is quite a rare version of what people have reported over the past, because like I said, the couple that have been shared with me that I mentioned earlier seem to be the quite regular ones, or people will be in a room and they'll start pointing in the room to relatives who aren't there and nobody else can see. But once again, the patient seems completely lucid and very happy, and it seems to be quite, some people find it quite unnerving, but I have spoken to people who said they found that really positive as though it's helping them rather than the actual patient, I suppose.
Well, let me share a story with you that happened to me about six or seven weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So my dad had been on hospice for about 3 years on a slow, steady decline. Mm-hmm. And I called him every day and I went and saw him every other day. Well, it was July 24th. And I had tried to call him a couple of times and he didn't answer, which was not uncommon because he was often really tired and he was often, you know, when you're on a steady decline like that, not always able to answer the phone. Mm-hmm. But I got a message from his hospice nurse that said, your dad's unresponsive. You know, we can't get him to respond at all. And so my wife and I got in the car and drove over. He and my mother are in a care facility. And as I got there, Dad was starting to come to a little bit, and he was talking to his social worker who happened to be there. And he, you know, I went over and I asked him, you know, are you okay? And he says, I need you to call everybody and have them come. He says, I'm leaving today. I'm dying today. I want to say goodbye to everybody. And so I did. I called his brothers and sisters and my sister and my brother. And so for about 4 hours, he became a lot more lucid. And for 4 hours, he got to visit with his brothers and sisters and their spouses and me and my sister and my brother and, you know, the whole family, grandkids and the two three great grandkids. And, you know, at one point I was talking to him and he says, you know, when they came to check on me earlier today, I was already gone. I was already dead, but I asked if I could come back and say goodbye to everybody. And they said I could. And I said, okay. And so we all visited, and after about 4 hours, he was getting really tired because he never visits that long. And I said, Dad, I need to run home. I just need to take a shower, grab something to eat, and then I'll be back. And he says, well, I won't be here when you get back, so say goodbye now. And I said, okay. And I got to give him a hug and say, you know, I love you. And I said, if you're going to go, I said, when you get on the other side, tell Grandpa and Uncle Glenn, who was his dad and my great uncle, who I was very, very close to. Mm. I said, tell them hi for me and that I love them. And he goes, I will. And I didn't know exactly, you know, what was going on. I mean, he said he wasn't going to make it through the night, but he seemed just fine. Mm. So my wife and I ran home and I showered and we grabbed something to eat. And the phone rang, and an hour after we had left, they went back in to check on him, and he had gone. He had passed. He just closed his eyes and left. But it was fascinating because he talked about the fact that he had already, when he had left the first time, he got to see his mom and dad, and he was excited to go back and see his mom and dad, and all the family that had passed, and he wasn't afraid, and he knew everything would be okay, and he knew he was going to die. It was at one point we were all in the room, and one of his friends in the care facility was coming back from dinner, and she was walking by with her walker, and he called out to her, and he's like, Maggie, you got to come in and say goodbye. And she goes, why? And he goes, because I'm dying today, so you got to say goodbye. And she goes, you can't die. And he goes, no, I am. He goes, I really enjoyed our time together, and thanks for everything. And she had a little cry and left. And sure enough, he did. He passed an hour after we left. So I don't know where that would fall in the paranormal realm or with these stories, but to me, it's still fascinating because he knew he'd already left. He came back. He got to come back, had a near-death experience, had talked to his family, came back, said goodbye to everybody, and knew that he was leaving. I mean, I wish that everybody got to do that. You know what I mean? That everybody got to say, hey, everybody, I'm going to be going. So, you know, it was great to see you. And, but yeah, it's really fascinating. And it's, you know, it made a very hard situation of losing my dad a lot easier because I was able to give him a hug and say goodbye like he was getting on a train and leaving. So
I suppose it's one of those things when you reflect on it, John, it's remarkable. And it's powerful. And I was struggling for the words to say it, but you said it yourself there at the end that it felt right. It was, it felt special because you had an opportunity, because I think most of us have been in a situation where the opposite's happened, that it's come out of nowhere and we've never had that. Even just to give him a hug and say goodbye and we'll see him tomorrow, wherever. We don't get that opportunity. But that in itself, I suppose, can be quite a challenge for people because it's very matter of fact from the person that's ill. It's almost as if, as you say, they've got they know what their destination time, they know what time the lift's coming, and so they've just got to get their affairs in order. And it is lovely in that regard because it makes it easier, I think, for everybody. Because clearly your dad was fully at peace with everything and knew what was going to happen and he wasn't frightened. And I think, therefore, that makes you all, whilst losing someone that's loved is always hard, I would imagine, as you say, it does make it slightly easier because even with his ongoing illness, John, you unfortunately, the one thing all of us have coming up is that we're all going to pass at some point, sadly.
Yeah.
But he seemed completely at peace with that. And they're the ones, as I touched on and as you very kindly shared, they're the ones where it really does make you think what is going on, because that just doesn't make any sense on any level.
Mm-mm. No, it really doesn't. And like I say, it's part of the realm of the paranormal, but not necessarily the scary part of the paranormal. It's a kind of a comforting thing, like you say. So, but still it falls under the realm that, you know, science can't really explain, like to a decent, you know, explanation of, and it's the same with people who have near death experiences as well. It's all part of that strange strange world that we're just trying to get a hold of and trying to understand, but it's great. You know, it really is.
It certainly is. I mean, you've got so many layers to this, John. It's incredible. The fact that he went and said, actually, I'd like to go back first. And they went, yeah, all right. No problems, buddy. I mean, that's nice that we've got that chance. That's always good, isn't it?
Right.
God knows what they'd have done 30 years ago when we didn't have mobile phones, John. They'd be like, what's going on here? Right, drag the landline in. Let's get ringing on the old rotary dials. You'd probably sprain your thumb by the time you've got everybody around. So
I know, I know. So
that is, it's heartwarming and and deeply touching. And I thank you again for that beautiful story. I suppose when, as I was saying, the medical professionals and some of those witnesses that we get, that you really take on board everything they're saying. It's the same, I would imagine. I'm not sure about yourself, John, but I always take police officers and firemen very similar as well. Whilst it's not, they don't necessarily see those kinds of situations as often, but they do deal with weird things and weird locations on occasions, and strange things do happen. One of my particular favourites, there's a collection of stories and experiences from police officers that a gentleman collected a few years ago now. And one of my particular favourites was a police station kept getting phone calls just saying, please come, please come. And when they go, it was an abandoned railway siding that hadn't been operational for 40 years and the phone line wasn't even connected.
Yeah. Yep.
And so you're like, whoa, why are they ringing the police station? What's going on?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I love those stories as well. When I can get stories again, like you say, from police officers or nurses or people who their entire job is about the details and making sure they're studying the details. And then they have a situation where, you know, something like this happens and, you know, they're able to give you such great details, and it's, and it, it feels, not that, you know, I don't believe everybody that brings it. It's just that sense of professionalism with their job, you know, that, that makes it really fascinating. So.
I suppose one of the hardest things about when you release one of your brilliant collections, John, is do you have a particular favorite in each particular volume? And if so, is there one particular story in this that you're amazed that you've been shared, or it's brand new to you and you've never had something like that before? Do you have a particular favorite? Or as with anything, John, is it like asking someone to pick their favorite child?
You know, it is like kind of picking your favorite child in a lot of ways. Yeah. Cause there's a lot of them that I love, in this book. And what's really great is, you know, I got so many stories that I was able to I go through with my wife and we pick out, she helps me go through and put the stories in that really, you know, hit, so that we can have UFO stories and Bigfoot stories. And, you know, I even have a Skinwalker story in there, and, you know, just a lot of different things like that. So I just love to keep it very diverse and very, you know, coming at you from a lot of different places. Yes. So,
yeah. But. Is there any of the weird that you don't get enough of, or you would like to have more of? I suppose, once again, John, careful what you wish for here. Is there a particular facet that you when you get them, you just, like you say, head scratches or the kind of cases that where it just, none of it makes sense? Is there any particular sort of niche in this field that you would like more of, or the kind of experiences that don't seem to happen that often, but when they do, blimey, they're a good one?
Well, you know, there's definitely a tier of the number of stories. I get a lot more ghost stories, and then UFO stories, and then cryptids, and then I would say glitches in the Matrix and cryptids are similar. And then down the road, I get fae stories, which is stories of the, you know, small creatures or little things or duendes. Mm. And so, so I guess I really, have an affinity for those just because they are so much more rare to get those. Mm. Not that I don't love all of them, of course, but, it's interesting that it seems like certain ones will become, I don't want to say more popular, but will seem to go up. For example, right now, for some reason, I'm gathering more stories of, I've just lost the word, where the mimic stories, whether something's mimicking, a person or their voice or something of that nature. For some reason, that seems to be a little bit more prevalent lately. And those are definitely ones that are very creepy and scary. So yeah, I love all of them, but definitely I would say fae, glitches in the Matrix and those kinds of things really get me excited when I hear somebody's got those stories. So
yeah. The mimics ones are perplexing because you seem to get two different types, John. You get the ones that like throwing their voice everywhere and pretending to be other members of the family or a community. And you get the ones that appear as people, but they just appear out of the wrong room. And like you share that brilliant story at the beginning of this particular book, where you seem to be teasing your son somewhat. Unfortunately, it's not you, John.
Yeah, no, it's not me. Yeah, that the ghost in particular that I grew up with, and that does tend to visit me here often for some reason, follow me home, loves to mimic voices. That's the one that, you know, he's always done that. Pretended to be my mother in another room when I was a kid, or my dad, or, you know, in some cases me to my son. And, so it's, and that seems a little bit, I guess, I mean, to most people that would still be very frightening, but to me, what's even more scary is when it appears to be somebody that you know, but it's just not, something's off, like something in the back of your head. I have a theory too that I've been working on. If you know what the uncanny valley is,
yes,
where I think that we have this in the back of our minds in as a genetic thing that we have from way back in the day that helps us recognize real humans and things that only look like humans. And our ancestors that couldn't do that aren't around anymore. And that's why we have that genetics still left over from something. So, but
yeah. Would you say yours is more mischievous than anything, John? Because like you say, when you read the account you share in the beginning of the book, that seems more like teasing. But obviously, as I'm sure you're very aware of, you sometimes get these accounts of mimics and they do seem quite malicious and nasty and more trickstery. Whereas this one, he seems to want to try and get your son's step count up more than anything.
Yeah. This one that I grew up with, like I said, and is here, which is simply, in my opinion, is just a ghost, somebody who used to be alive that isn't anymore. He does it for giggles, for laughs and giggles. He loves to do it. I imagine that, you know, maybe one day when I die and I get to meet him on the other side, that... when he was alive, he was probably a huge trickster, just loving to play pranks. And so now he's figured out how to do voices or try to do this or that and just gets a kick out of it. And because that's the main thing that's happened most of my life growing up in that house was him seeing how many times he could get me to go in the kitchen to talk to my mom who wasn't there, you know. And so, yeah, for sure. So.
Oh, marvellous. So, obviously, the book's been out a few weeks now, John, and I always hate doing this with people because it always seems like I'm being quite churlish about what you've just released, but I would imagine that your collections are continue to burgeon, and you're an extremely prolific and regular author with your releases these days. Where are you taking us next, John? Have you already got an idea in mind in regards to the overarching theme of the next volume of your wonderful collections?
I have narrowed it down to two because I've been getting quite a few stories from these areas, and the next two will be Stranger California and Stranger Alaska. Which one will come out first? I haven't decided yet. I was lucky enough 2 weeks ago to go spend a week in Alaska with my wife. And I was in Alaska about 20, 25 years ago, got to go a couple weeks ago and spend a week. And I just absolutely love Alaska. It is one of the most beautiful places. And so I'm trying to collect quite a few stories from there because I would like to do that and California, because I have a lot of stories already from California and I'm collecting more, so the next two will be California and Alaska, but which one will come out first? I haven't quite decided yet. So,
yes, I mean, I've always been struck by Alaska that it is beautifully desolate, John. Mm-hmm. There is something remarkable that it is such a big place with so few people, and there doesn't seem to be anything off the table in Alaska.
Yeah.
From, you know, even if you talk about the amount of planes that disappear, any strange area seems to get its own triangle these days, John. I mean, we always used to be happy that it was always in Bermuda, but they seem to be all over the blooming place these days.
Yes.
And every time you think you've heard everything about Alaska, you stumble across something that either is, you just think, what on earth is going on there? Because I was watching something the other week and I can't remember what the program was about, but it talked about this particular village or town in Alaska where every single person lives in one tower block. And I was like, what? And then you suddenly have to step back and think, well, actually, it really does make sense because Alaska is a place that doesn't suffer fools at all on any level.
Right. Yeah, and that's so true.
The more I thought about it, the more it made sense. And I began to think, well, why wouldn't anybody want to live like that in Alaska? Because you think, I don't need to leave. It's minus 46 outside. I can just jump in the elevator to go to the barbers.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I have read about that town as well. That's really fascinating. Yeah. And the further you get to the Arctic Circle, the colder it gets. And so, yeah, I told my wife if I was in my 20s and I was starting over, I would go make my living in Alaska. I just love it. I love it so much. But Yeah.
I know there's an old fishing village, John, where property is very cheap, but I'm not really sure what the reason is why it was abandoned.
Right. That's that's the question right there. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't care what anybody tells me about that. Anybody that, whatever dragged that machinery into the woods was not a person.
No.
Therefore, I only want to see that place on television, John.
Yes. Yep. That is for sure.
Well, John, thank you as always for sharing some of your stories and some of your personal experiences. It's been as heartwarming and as lovely as always. Where can everybody get this book and your previous work, follow you online and keep up to date with everything going on under the world of the strange Abridgeland?
So all of my books are available on Amazon, softback, Kindle, Audible as well. You can get them all on there. I do have a few that are hardback too, if you're a big fan of hardback. You can reach me or find out anything that I have going on strangerbridgerland.com. And if any of your listeners have stories, please reach out to me and I would love to interview them and get, I'm always collecting more stories. So, and always, it's always such a blast to come on and, you know, the time just flies by. You do an amazing job and I really appreciate everything you do. So, Paul.
The very same to you, my friend. Thank you for keep scaring the pants off me with your wonderful collections and long may it continue, my friend. It is always a pleasure to spend some time in your company and I thank you again for fitting me in and I can't wait for the next volume of Wherever You Decide to Scare Us from going next.
Awesome. I'm excited to find that out myself. So
thank you, John.
Thank you so much.